Good morning. Today's Daf in Bava Kamma is Tes Vav. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is Learn Zech Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bas Shmuel. We are in the Mishnah in Yudal Amud Beis. Let's begin the Mishnah. As we have gone over the Mishnayos now in the first parak of Bava Kamma, so the Gemara already made the comment that the Mishnayos of the first parak of Bava Kamma are a little bit poetic. They're a little, the Lashon Kalila, they're like a letter language. And so it doesn't resonate as your traditional Mishnayos, where the Mishnah is just telling you, here's a halacha, here's a halacha, here's a halacha. But rather, the Mishnayos are speaking a little bit of ambiguity, a little bit of poetry. And I say that as we're about to learn the next Mishnah of the first parak of Bava Kamma, Shum Kesef. So the Mishnah tells us that you evaluate with money. Shava Kesef, it's got to be something that's worth money. Bifnei Beis, in front of Beis Din Alpi Edim, it's got to be in front of witnesses. Bnei Chorim, Bnei Bris, the witnesses have to be both free and Jewish. Vanashim Bechlal Nezik, women are included in Nezik. And Vanizik Vamazik Beteshlam. And sometimes the suffering of the damages, meaning the burden of having to pay for the damages, is going to be shared by both the one who perpetrated the damage and the one who is the recipient of the damage. Okay, so the first comments of the Mishnah, I really didn't do much in terms of explaining, because the Gemara is going to do all the heavy lifting for us. So let's begin with the Gemara right away. Maishum Kesef. So the Mishnah goes over, you can count it up as 8 different halachas in the Mishnah. So, okay, let's call this halacha number 1 of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah talks about Shum Kesef. Now, Shum means an appraisal. There's some sort of evaluation. So it only begs the question, what are we talking about when we say Shum Kesef, some sort of appraisal? Amar Rav Yehuda Shum Zeh, lo yeh ela bikesef. When you do an appraisal, the appraisal has to be done in money. Still, at this point in time, it's not perfectly clear what the Mishnah means, even after the Gemara gave an explanation. Stay tuned, because the Gemara is going to further clarify. V'tanin al hadatan rabbanan. So the Gemara says, maybe all this could be illustrated with the following. It's a brisa. Parashe zikatala. So we're going to have a couple of examples. Example number one is where a cow does damage to a talus. Rashi over here describes. Parashe zikatala, Rashi. Shidarsa ala bechatzar hanizak. So Rashi over here says that what happened is that the animal is walking, and it walks over a talus and does damage to the talus. Now, Rashi over here is very careful the way he illustrates the scenario. Rashi says that the animal is walking on the talus b'chatzer hanizak, in the courtyard of the one who was damaged. Why is Rashi doing that? Because Rashi over here is clearly describing this as a case of regel, and as we discussed in yesterday's daf, and we're going to reiterate right now, and that is that the damage of regel is only going to be incurred b'stei acher, only when going into the other person's property, meaning when going on the nizak's property. So Rashi over here giving the illustration of the animal trampling over the clothing, the talus. So Rashi over here says that this is in the property of the Nizak, because Rashi clearly here is working under the assumption that we're talking about regel. Regel, of course, once this falls under the category of regel, so that it's Nezik Shalem, you have to pay for full damages. So Rashi gives us as illustration number one. Vitalis, Shizika, Vitalis, Shizika, Para. Rashi says, or we could be talking about another case. Simple Pshan Rashi is that this is a separate case. Right, in other words, especially if you put the box insertion into Rashi, where the word O belongs in the next word in Rashi, O talis shehizik o para b'rishos rabim kagon shenizkala behema betalis v'nishba regel para. The scenario over here is where you left a talus in the rishos rabim, and then an animal tripped on the talus. Animal broke the leg. Now, this would fall under the category of bor, meaning you put an obstacle in the rishos rabim. This is bor b'rishos rabim. Now, as we've discussed already in day one of the Masechta, but we get to reiterate right now, a bor doesn't literally have to be just a pit. Anytime you put something of an impediment, an obstacle, right? The pit is a classic example, but it could be a knife, it could be, as we're learning right now, even a talus. If you put something in a rishos rabim and somebody slips on it and causes injury and damages either him or any of his property, so then the balabor, so then the the owner of the pin, in this case the owner of the talis, is going to have to make restitution. Okay, so these are two different scenarios, but the point that the Braisa is going to illustrate is the following. So let's go back to the Gemara. Para shi yizika talis, vital shi yizika para. In both of these scenarios, ein omrim teisei para betalis, vitalis bepara. So here's what you shouldn't do. Let's go over the first case. First case is that my animal was in the property of the Nizak. My animal trampled over the person's talis, damaged it. So you know what? I go over to the guy and I say, "Look, I'm really sorry. Okay, apologies are nice, by the way, but in the world of Nezik, apologies don't do anything. I'm really sorry. Here we go. You know what? Just take my animal. My animal is going to far exceed the damages that were done to your talis. So just take the animal." That's what the first halacha in the Mishnah is teaching us. The first halacha in the Mishnah is that's not how we do appraisal in terms of damages. Appraisal in terms of damages has to be estimated from a cash value standpoint. It cannot be where I just simply look at my animal and say, you know what, my animal is worth much more than the damages that were incurred by you. Just take my animal. You can't barter like that. The appraisal has to be on a cash basis. We have to look at the cash value of the damages. Yes, Danny.
Why can't the Mazik have a claim that the talus is not an unusual place?
Gemara is just focusing on the assessment of the damages. In terms of the actual damages are concerned, once the animal's on the Rishus HaNizak, remember, the way Rashi set up the first case, the animal's on the property of the Nizak. So at that point in time, you're liable for damages, even Shein V'Regel. Even just simple eating, even just simple walking. Right, in a public area, so then there is no Shein V'Regel. Even in a jointly owned area, like we discussed yesterday's daf, there's no Shein V'Regel. Okay, so it has to be the Shein V'Regel damages are only going to be paid when it's Birishus Anizak. That's why Rashi was very specific about the case. Ella, back to the Gemara. Shaman Osa B'damim, you have to appraise the damages in terms of its cash value, how much money was actually lost, and that is the only way that you appraise damages. Shav Kesef, we're up to now the second halacha in the Mishnah. Again, the very poetic Mishnah, Shum Kesef, now we're up to number two, Shav Kesef. What does that mean? Tana Rabbanan Shav Kesef, Malam Hashem, Basin Nizkakin El Nechasim Sheish Lamachrayos. So the Gemara says that when Basin collects on damages, Basin only collects from property, from real estate. And that's what's meant in the Mishnah of Shav Kesef. There are going to be two problems right now that the Gemara is going to have with this explanation. And you already know, you can already guess both problems. Number one, we already discussed in the beginning of the Masechta that in terms of the payment of damages, yes, the Torah says Meitav Sadeo Meitav Karmo Yishalem. The Torah does say property, that's true, but the Torah also says Yashiv L'Rabbos Esasubin. We've already learned earlier in the Masechta that the payment for damages can be done either with property or it can be done with money. And we already spent a number of different ways of trying to explain the discrepancy of which one is it. Is it property? Is it money? But you know that property is not the only way to pay for damages. So when Amisha says Shav Kesef, it's referring to property. So you already know, we already know that that's not true. It's not limited to just property. Furthermore, how did we get from the word Shav Kesef to property? It's even a simpler question. Meaning, we're saying the Pshat in the Mishnah, but really when we're saying the Pshat in the Mishnah, how do we even get there? How do we make the jump from Shav Kesef of the Mishnah? Oh, that means property. How does that work? So Aval, sorry. Let's go. I'm sorry. Back to the Gemara. Malam Hashem Beis Din is Kaken Al Nechasim Sheish Lamachrayus. Beis Din will only collect with property. Avalim Kadam Nizak V'Tafas Metaklan Beis Din Govan Lamehem. However, if along comes the Nizak, the one who was damaged, and just simply getting more and more impatient as he was owed damages and they're not getting paid, so he goes over to the house of the Mazik and he does a tfisa. He grabs some assets. Right, movable assets. So Beis Din will, when Beis Din finally gets around to judging the case, will look at how much was actually taken by the Nizak, as long as it is comparable value to the damages that were done, so that would be okay. And later this morning, we're going to talk more about this idea of tfisa, of the Nizak just coming along and grabbing. We'll speak more about that later on. In the meantime, however, Amar Mar Shav Kesef, Malam Chein Beis Din, Nizkaken El Nechasim Sheish Lamachrayos. The Gemara right away tackles the question, when I presented the two questions, the one I asked second. Really, I should have presented that as number one. The number one question the Gemara is asking is, how do we make that jump? That when the Mishnah says Shav Kesef, oh, that's a reference to property. when does Shava Kesef mean property? How can Shava Kesef be a reference to property? My mashma, that's the Gemara's question. How does that work? Amar Rava Barula Davar Hashava Kol Kesef Umayinihu Davar She'in Lo Ona'a. So the Gemara says, well, you know, the reason why Shava Kesef is a reference to property, because you know what property is worth? Property is worth anything. Meaning, the Gemara over here says, and we're going to see this a couple of times in the Bavas, Ein Ona'a Lekarkos, that there is no prohibition of Ona'a when it comes to property. When you buy and sell property, before we get to that point, when you buy and sell any particular item, so there is what's called the market value. On the market value, so obviously, including the market value is some sort of profit margin for the seller. Seller's allowed to make money. That's how people make a living. So sellers allowed to make money. So the profit margin is included in the fair market value. Once there's an established fair market value, so then the seller cannot either overcharge or undercharge. This is a prohibition the Torah called Ona. And when we get to Bava Metzia, we're going to be discussing Ona in much more detail, much greater detail. Right? The threshold of Ona is 1/6, and there are three halachas of overcharging anywhere under a 6, at a 6, or over a 6. And again, when we get to Bava Metzia, we'll discuss this in more detail. Our Gemara is teaching us that when it comes to real estate, when it comes to property, Ein Ona LeKarkos, which at face value means that when it comes to buying and selling property, there is no said value, and as a result of that, property could be sold for any amount. There is no quote-unquote fair market value when it comes to property. I know all of us are interested in the going prices of houses, especially our own houses. We all love to find out how much it's worth. But the Gemara tells us that if somebody is ready to either pay a lot more for your property, or the seller is ready to sell it for a lot less than what it's worth, ain't Ona, so then there's no Isser Ona. That's a simple reading of the Mishnah. There is more discussion in the Rishonim in terms of whether or not this is just an absolute carte blanche to sell property at whatever price, or is there any type of cap whatsoever. You can see Tosus right here on the Amud. Tosus over here says that even when the Gemara says ain't Ona LeKarkos, so Tosus says that's not Lav Davka. Tosus says it's a small Tosos. It's Tosus number 2 on the Amud. He says Lav Davka Diyasami Palge Yeshlam Ona. Tosus says there is a cap, half. In other words, you can't sell a property for less than half of what it's worth, and presumably no greater than, presumably according to Tosos, 100% of what it's worth. Anyway, it's its own separate discussion. Right now, for our purposes, we're just learning how we can get from the word Shava Kesef to property. So what the Gemara is suggesting is, it's very simple, because property is basically any price. And that's not true by any other commodity. When it comes to movables, there is a fair market value. And you can't charge over a certain amount and under a certain amount. That's how we can get from Shava Kesef to property. Huh? It's not a question of everyone owning property. Oh, you're talking... What you're asking is... The Gemara is going to get to that next point, which is it can't just be property that you have to pay damages. We're going to get to that point. Right now, we're just getting from how do we know that Shava Kesef is a reference to property? So this is what the Gemara is suggesting. Since property is not included in the Isser of Ona'a, so therefore it can be valued at any amount. Ushtaras Nami Ein Lam Ona'a. So the Gemara says, yes, but you also know this halacha of there's no Ona'a by properties is also true regarding... I'm sorry, I skipped a word. Avadim Ushtaras Nami Ein Din Ona'a. We know that just like property is not in the prohibition of Ona'a, neither is the sale of a slave, neither is the sale of a shtar. You can charge, again, at the simplest level, the simple reading of the Gemara, for an Eved Kenani, you can pay any price. There's no quote-unquote fair market value. In terms of a shtar, even though it's pretty clear how much you should be paying for a document, but you want to discount a note, you want to, for whatever reason, overpay for a note, can't imagine why, but there is no Ona when it comes to shtars as well. So, if this is the pshat that we're giving, so then it doesn't work. Excuse me. Because Shava Kesef then would not just be limited to property. Included in Shava Kesef would also be Karka and, Avadim and Shtaros. So the Gemara says, Ela Amarava Barula Davar Hanikne Bekesef. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you how we get from the word Shava Kesef to property. Because you know, what is the means of acquisition when it comes to property? kesef. Money is the way you acquire property. That's not true regarding movables. When it comes to movables, mishicha, hagba, misira, all the various ways of forms of kinyanim that we learn in the beginning of kedushin. But money is not the way, is not the means of kinyan when it comes to movables. But again, the Gemara is bothered by basically the same question. Avanu musharas nami, niknim bekesef. Well, again, if we're talking about the method of acquisition, you also acquire slaves and shtar through kesef as well. So the Gemara says, so once again, how do we get from shava kesef to it only is a reference to property? Elam Ravashi, shava kesef, velo kesef, vahani kulu kesef ninu. So the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you how we do it. Because when it comes to any other asset other than property, you can physically move it, just like money. Meaning, what is the noted quality about money? You can carry it wherever you want. You can take it wherever you want. Now, the same thing is true regarding metaltolin, movables. I can pick it up, I can move it. Now, even though regarding most halachas, a document, a shtar, a note, also has a halachas like property, but unlike property, you can take a note and you can move it. You can do the same thing with an Eved Kanani as well. You can pick him up and you can move him. However, karka is the only thing where I can't physically move it. So when I'm looking for something that's not kesef, but shava kesef, in the fact that I cannot physically pick it up and move it, the only thing that that is referencing is property. Okay, so that's issue number one. How does the word shava kesef on our Mishnah mean property? So the Gemara gives up shah. Then the Gemara says, okay, but then now it brings us to the next point, which I alluded to. Now the Gemara is going to ask it. Ramele Rav Yehuda Bar, Chinana le Rav Huna Berei de Rav Yehoshua, Tana shava kesef la mishayim beizin nizkakin al nechassim sheish la machrayos, v'hatanya. The Gemara now is going to ask a question, which is a repeated question. We've seen this already being presented earlier in the Masechta. Yashul Rabba shava kesef afilu subin. When you're paying for damages, the Raisa says that from the word yashiv in the Torah, one is allowed to pay anything that has monetary value. You can even use bran, the coarse bran of the wheat. You can use that as long as you appraise it and it's a value, and the value is commensurate to the damages that were done. So then you can pay with subin as well. So how can our Mishnah again repeat this idea that the only way to pay for damages is with property, and meanwhile the pasuk and the drasha teaches us that you can pay with money as well, or anything that has monetary value? So the Gemara says, "Hachabai ma'is kinim biyasmei." So the Gemara says, "Okay, our Mishnah that limits the payment with only property is talking about where there are yesomim, meaning that the person did damage. The person now has an obligation to pay. The person died. Now, as the estate goes over to the next generation, the only thing where the nizak can come and collect from are only the properties. Because, yes, there is a shibud. Yes, there is a lien against the estate of the one who did the damage. But that lien is only against properties. It's not going to be against any of the movables. That's why the Mishnah over here is limiting this halacha to the estate, to the real property, because we're talking about the yesomim. The Gemara says, "Ibi yasmi em seifa." The Gemara says, well, if you're right about that, and then look at the next line of the Braisa. Im kodem nizak v'tafas metaltlan beisin govan lo mehem. That if the nizak, the damaged party, walks over and says, it's enough time already, I'm getting impatient, and he does a tfisa and he grabs. He takes assets from the mazik in order for satisfaction of the payment that's owed to him. So Beis Din will then make an appraisal in terms of how much he took, make sure that he did not take more than what's actually owed to him, and Beis Din will be okay with it. But wait one second. Once you're now telling me that the Mishnah is talking about Yesomim, we're talking about the orphans, so then no. You can't, even though the Nizak is owed the money, and even though there is a lien, but that lien is only on property. The rest of the estate, all the movables in the estate, are not mortgaged against that obligation. And therefore, you cannot have the Nizak come and take those assets. So the Gemara says, "Ibi yasmei amai Beis Din govan lo mehem." So the Gemara says, if we're talking about Yesomim, I don't understand. He's not entitled to the metaltolin. So the Gemara says, "Kedam Rav, Amar Rav Nach, Mishatafas Mechayim, Hachana, Mishatafas Mechayim." So the Gemara says, well, that next line of the Braisa that has to be, it's the only pshat, that has to be where the Nizak took the assets while the damager was still alive. While he's still alive, so then the damager, the Mazik, has an obligation to pay. Again, for whatever reason, Beis Din stays just. The court case is not moving, so along comes the Nizak over to the Mazik and takes, and he's tofes and he grabs. As long as he does it while the Mazik is alive, so then even after the Mazik dies, Beis Din will still say that the Tvisa was legitimate. And the only thing they're going to just to make sure is that he took commensurate value to the damages that were owed to him. Okay, that is so far what we've seen in our Gemara is an explanation of the first two halachas of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says shum kesef. That's a reference to the idea that when you appraise the damages, you have to appraise it in context to money. You have to take the monetary value of the damages. You have to appraise the monetary value of the damages. That was one halacha. A second halacha is shav kesef. Then when you pay back, you can only pay back with property. But as we just went through the Gemara, that limitation that you can only pay back with property is talking about the estate having to pay for the damages. If it's the principal party who did the damages, he pays with property, he pays with movables, he'll pay with whatever he has, as we've already discussed earlier. The Mishnah's limitation is only talking about the estate. Next halacha. Bifnei Beis Din, we're in front of a Beis Din. Prat lamocha nechasav achaka cholech le Beis Din. So the Gemara says, well, let's say that somebody damaged somebody else, has a lot of real estate, and is thinking to himself, "Oh, I don't want to lose this real estate." So what does he do? He sells off his real estate, and then he goes to Beis Din, trying to shelter his assets. So the Gemara says, "Well, Shema Mina, Lova Macha Nechasav Achakach Bala Beis Din, Eben Beis Din Govan LaMeham." So the Gemara says, "Now come on." Selling the properties is not going to help him, meaning there's a lien against those properties. So even if he, as long as he had those properties while he damaged, and then he sold off the properties, there's still going to be a lien attached to those properties, and so selling the properties is not going to help. So the Gemara says, that's not a good pshat in the Mishnah, simply not correct. Ella, prat lebeisin ed yoto. So the Gemara says, fine. What the Mishnah means by this is that in order to ascertain whether or not there was damages, how much the damages are owed, you have to go to a established Beis Din. You cannot go to Beis Din Hadyotos, you cannot go to a quote unquote a simple Beis Din. But it has to be an established Beis Din. A Beis Din also that's made up of mumchim, of experts. They have smicha. We're going to discuss more about that in just a moment. Al pi eidim. In order to award the damagee money, there has to be witnesses. Meaning that for just a person to come to Beis Din and say, he damaged my property, really, okay? Are there witnesses to that event? If there are no witnesses to that event, so then Beis Din is in no position to take money out of one person's hand to give it to another person. There has to be witnesses corroborating that this in fact happened. Otherwise, hamotzi mechaver al avaraya. You're trying to take money out of somebody's hands. You need proof positive that this happened. So the only way that we're going to have verification that the damage has occurred is only through witnesses. The Gemara says, prat lamod beknas v'achakach bo'edim shu pater. So the Gemara says, now, excluded from this is the following. Let's say somebody owes not compensation but knas, punitive damages, what we would call a fine. So we know, and we're going to say this a couple of times over the course of this morning, mode beknas pater. If you volunteer that you owe knas, so then you're exempt to pay. This is a basic halacha regarding knas of mode beknas pater. So the Gemara says, well, you're thinking about self-incrimination, but that's a different issue. Self-incrimination in terms of receiving corporal punishment, meaning let's say you come to Beis Din and say that I violated Shabbos. So ein adam mesa matzmo rasha. A person can't incriminate himself. Beis Din's not going to react to that. Beis Din just will not accept that testimony. Here we're talking about the owing of money. If you accept a compensatory obligation upon yourself, you absolutely can do that. You can go to Beis Din and say, I owe him $100.
No, but I'm saying by just admitting it, you actually don't owe it?
Yes. By knas.
By knas, yeah.
Correct. So that's what's called mode beknas. That's correct. So pralam mode beknas v'achakach ba'u'edim. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what our Mishnah is coming to teach us the following. Let's say you step forward to Beis Din and you admit to owing a knas, which gives you an exemption. And then after your admission, in comes two witnesses. Says, you see that guy over there? He owes a knas. So now, this is an interesting discussion. We're going to see this a couple of times over the course of the Bavas. What would be the halacha if after you had your own admission that you owe the kenas, what if the witnesses then come and tell the Beis Din he owes the kenas? Are the witnesses able to, quote-unquote, resurrect your kenas obligation? This is a debate. The Gemara now is suggesting that's the Pshat in our Mishnah. That even after your own personal admission, if witnesses come and say you owe the kenas, well, you're going to have to pay. The Gemara says, Hanich laman damar modde b'kenas v'achar kach ba'o'edem pater. So, I'm sorry. What the Mishnah is telling us is that you're still going to be exempt. So the Gemara says, that's good if you subscribe to that viewpoint. However, this is a very hotly debated topic in the Gemara, whether or not you're in fact going to be exempt if witnesses come afterwards and say that you're actually obligated in the Knas. So if you subscribe to the viewpoint of Patur, so then you understand our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is teaching us that point. But if you're of the opinion that you're Chayav, you're going to have to say a different Pshat in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, say for Itzrich Lei. So the Gemara says, fine, so we'll say a different Pshat in the Mishnah. We're now on the very top of Tezvav and Aleph. B'nei Chorin, Ubnei Bris. So the Gemara says that really the Mishnah, in terms of saying the words Beis Din, you're right. There's no inherent Chiddush over there. When the Mishnah says the word Al Pi Edim, that's what I meant to say. When the Mishnah says the words Al Pi Edim, there's no inherent Chiddush in the word Al Pi Edim. It has to be witnesses. And then as far as what the Chiddush of the Mishnah is, it's the qualification. What kind of Edim? So B'nei Chorin or B'nei Bris, the Gemara says it's the next part of the Mishnah, which is a Chiddush. That the Mishnah says that they have to be free and they have to be Jewish. B'nei Chorin le'me'utei avadim. Eved Kanani. We're talking about Eved Kanani. Eved Ivri is a Jew. Absolutely, he's a Jew. He's an indentured servant. He's a full-fledged Jew. He has, as we discussed throughout Kedushin, there is one notable exception that he can marry a Shifcha Kananis, but again, the word marriage over there we're going to use very loosely. He could be paired with a Shifcha Kananis, they can have children, but in terms of all other areas of Allah, he's a Jew. So the Gemara says, B'nei Chorin, B'nei Bris, B'nei Chorin, L'mutei Avadim, so he can, an Eved Kanani, cannot serve as a witness, and B'nei Bris L'mutei of the Kochavim, and a non-Jew also cannot serve as a witness. Those are the chidushim that are taught to us in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that in order to be a witness to damages, you have to be a freed Jew. You can't be a slave, even though a slave has an Eved Kanani has a quasi-status of a Jew. We've discussed time and again throughout Kiddushin, a Eved Kanani is chayiv in almost all the mitzvahs in the Torah. The exemption is from mitzvahs esei shazman grama, time-bound mitzvahs, but they're chayv in all mitzvahs in the Torah. The Eved Kanani has a bris milah, so I might have thought that an Eved Kanani could testify. The Mishnah is telling us no, they cannot. And a non-Jew also cannot testify.
Is this trying to force people to admit it themselves so they get out? And if you have to go to the Kanas,
wait, hold on. You're conflating two issues. The Kanas issue, the Gemara already has addressed. The Gemara now is moving on to the next point, which is the Mishnah is teaching us the words B'nei Chorin and B'nei Bris. Why is the Mishnah teaching us that? That the only thing that will incur my obligation to pay for damages is only if the witnesses who testified are going to be both Jewish and free. The separate issue from Kanas. We've moved away from Kanas. So the Gemara says, Now truth be told is that it seems to be a bit redundant. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why it's not redundant. Because when it comes to the Eved Kanani, there's no yichus whatsoever. Okay? By the Eved Kanani. And as a result of that, right, we've seen time and again, right, Shvul Lachem Poim HaChamor, Am Hadom HaChamor. In other words, when it comes to an Eved Kanani, there's just simply no Yichus. And so therefore, with no Yichus, so it's basically what the Gemara is arguing is, he's really encouraged to lie. Meaning, he's got nothing to lose. He's got no reputation. He's got no yichus. He doesn't have to worry about his name, his family's name, his children's reputation. So there, I can understand, I can make an argument in terms of why he has zero credibility. However, aval nachri d'yesh lo yichus eim alo. But when it comes to a non-Jew, non-Jew has credibility. Non-Jew, not in halacha, but just from an intuitive standpoint. Meaning, there's yichus. They have a name. They have a family name. They want to protect the family name. So there, the Gemara is entertaining a hava mina that therefore they should have credibility. That's why the Mishnah has to make sure to be memai to exclude the nachri. And viyashmina nachri mishum doloshach b'mitzvus hava eved deshach b'mitzvus emalo. And then you can also make another argument, and that is if the nachri is not going to be credible in the court of law, he's not chayv in mitzvos. Fine, but the eved kenani who's chayv, as we've just discussed, in most of the mitzvos in the Torah. So then you can make an argument where he has the burden slash responsibility slash the privilege. Let's speak about it in positive terms. He has the privilege of doing the mitzvos in the Torah. So therefore, one can make the argument that the havamina would be he's believed. That's why the Mishnah has to also go out of its way to exclude the Eved Kenani as well. So I could have made arguments why either one of them are going to be believed in a court of law when it comes to Nezek. That's why the Mishnah has to exclude both. The Hanashim Bechlal HaNezek, women are also included in Nezek. That's the next point of the Mishnah. Minani Mili, the Gemara says, how do I know that I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Chintan, and Rav Yishmael HaMakra? So here we go now with three different drushas that are going to teach us that if a woman's property is going to be damaged, so she is as entitled to collect damages as a man. How do I know that? So the Gemara is going to arrive at this conclusion three different ways. Isho isha ki yasu mikol chatos, hishva akasav isha leish, lechol onshin shebetora. When it comes to punishments in the Torah, men and women are on equal footing with one another, and therefore, just like if a man were to violate this in the Torah, he'd be culpable and liable and eligible for punishment. Same thing is true regarding a woman as well, if she were to violate any Isser in the Torah. And by extension, if she does Nezek, if she does damages, she's going to have to pay. If she is the recipient of damages, she's going to be entitled to be paid. These are the laws that you place lifnehem in front of them. Men and women, in terms of dinim, in terms of monetary law, men and women are on the same footing with one another. That is the second drasha. The Gemara is going to give a third drasha. If an ox were to put to death either a man or a woman, so there would have to be a kofar payment paid to the family for the wrongful death of the person. The Torah there clearly states that the kofar payment is going to be obligated whether the one who was murdered was either a man or a woman. This is, once again, another source that men and women, when it comes to monetary payment, are going to be on the same footing with one another. And then the Gemara is going to ask the next obvious question, which is three drushas that are all arriving at the same conclusion. And that seems to be two drushas more than necessary. Tzricha. The Gemara now is going to go through the need of all three drushas. Diashmina kamaisa. If I only had the first drusha, hasam hu dechas rachmana Allah ki hechad da'avila kapara. You see, in the first drusha, we're just simply saying that men and women are eligible for punishment. But punishment over there means like makos, like a carbon chatas. And one can make the argument, of course, meaning much like whenever you give a punishment out, when Beis Din gives a punishment, or for a carbon for that matter. So the purpose of the punishment is kapara. It's there to serve as an atonement. So now you can wash away that which you did wrong. So you can understand men and women want that same opportunity of kapara. Avaldinim ish de bar maso matan. But when it comes to monetary law, so men who are generally the ones who are transacting and doing the business in, so they are included in the financial. In the financial halacha, ishalo, but not a woman, because women are typically not the ones who are transacting. So that's why I need the second drasha. Now here we can also reverse the argument, meaning if all I had was a second drasha of asher tasim lefnehem, which equates men and women in terms of all the monetary law, so there I can make the argument of yes, because in the event that a woman's not married, the Torah is not going to limit her from providing for herself, so therefore she can and will engage in business, and she'll be protected by all the business laws that men are going to be protected from. So the Gemara says, so fine, so there I can make the argument that she needs a livelihood, so that's why she's incorporated in all the monetary law. Ava kapara ishta bar mitzvah in isha dala bar mitzvah lo. But when it comes to kapara, again, it's a havamina, but I might have thought that men are the only ones ones who are really excited and interested in getting a kapara, because they are bar mitzvah. Bar mitzvah here meaning they are obligated by all the mitzvahs of the Torah, and so therefore that's a lot. I'm going to exaggerate a little bit because it's not a lot, but it's more mitzvos, and because they have more mitzvos, they want more opportunity if they stumble to get a kapara. But women know. So the Gemara says, so that's why I need drushas 1 and 2. Now if all I had was drushas 1 and 2, hachmishim kapar v'hachmishim chayus. But we've just given arguments why I need the first drusha to tell me that women also would like a kapara. I need the second drusha to tell me women also, in the event that they're not being supported, need a way to provide themselves livelihood. Now when it comes to the kofar payment, the Gemara has a havamina that men who are obligated to all the mitzvahs in the Torah, so therefore there's going to be a kofar payment in the event of a wrongful death of a man. But women who are not obligated to all the mitzvahs, so there's not going to be a kofar payment. In other words, what the Gemara is, as a havamina, suggesting is that the kofar payment is in lieu of the fact that you've taken away somebody who had the opportunity to do all the mitzvahs in the Torah. So that's the havamina. The Torah's chiddush is no. The iashmina and kofar. Now, what if I only had the last drasha? I wouldn't necessarily get back to the drashas 1 and 2. V'yashmin and kofar mishum de'ika ibn neshama. You see, because in drasha number 3, there was an actual loss of life. So therefore, there has to be a compensation for loss of life. Avahani tartu, but in the first two, in the first drasha of punishment, in the second drasha of being bound by monetary business law, so there, it's not a loss of life. Now, we said livelihood, but it's not ibu neshama. It's not a loss of life. The leka ibu neshama imalot tzricha. So the Gemara presents an argument why I need all three drashas. Okay, the rest of today's daf is now going to revolve around the following. Hanizav ha-mazik b'tashlamim, that when it comes to this is the last point our Mishnah made on Yudam and Beis, where we started this morning, is that sometimes damages are done by the mazik, and in terms of compensation, there's going to be a joint payment of compensation both by the mazik and by the nizak. What do you think the Mishnah is talking about? Okay, well, the most obvious answer, which the Gemara now is gonna entertain, is a case of short tam, meaning Karen. My animal gores somebody else's property. What is the halacha? I don't have to pay full damages. I only need to pay half damages. Well, so, what does that mean? It means that the damaged party is also going to be suffering a loss as well. If I'm paying only half the damages, who do you think is paying the other half damages? The nizak, the one who was damaged. So the simplest way to read our Mishnah, and the simplest interpretation of the Mishnah, is that when we're talking about a mazik and a nizak, both contributing to the damages, we're talking about the case of Karen, of a short tam, where I only need to pay for half damages. Okay. Now, the way the Gemara is going to present this information is the following. There's a very interesting halacha which we are going to be discussing from now till the end of today's daf, and that's the following. You see, in most areas of Nezek, if I do damage, if I have a pit in the Rishus HaRabim and it damages somebody, if my animal damages either by trampling or by eating in the Rishus HaNizak, so under most, or if I physically do damage to somebody else, so the halacha is very clear. I have to make compensation. I have to make full compensation. And of course, meaning I damaged, we assess how much I damage, and then I have to make full compensation. In one area, although I'm going to hedge a little bit because as we'll see at the end of today's daf, it's not just one area, but for our purposes right now, I'll say, in one area in halacha, the Torah has a very interesting conclusion, which is that I'm not going to pay for full damage, I'm going to pay for half damages, and that's by Karen. When my animal gores somebody, either somebody else's property or somebody else, so I only need to pay for half the damages. And the question you can ask, it's a really simple question, why am I only paying for half damages? So there are basically going to be two ways that Gemara is going to look at it. I'll present it both outside, and then we'll see it all inside. One way to look at it is that the Torah is cutting me a break. Meaning, really fundamentally, I should be paying for all of it. I did the damages again. It's my animal. It's my responsibility. I needed to watch my animal. I should really be paying for full damages. The fact that the Torah only imposes me to pay half damages, the Torah is cutting me a break. Now, when I say the Torah is cutting me a break, let's all acknowledge at the expense of the Nizak, meaning the Nizak is now going to have to suffer half the damages. Okay, but this is so unusual that my animal went ahead and gored somebody. We're talking about not a wild beast. We're talking about an ox. Yes, if the ox is poked and prodded, it's going to damage, but it's unlikely that this would have happened. Therefore, it's going to cut me a break. That's one possibility. What's the other possibility? Really, the truth of the matter is that this damage that my ox did by goring somebody is so unusual. Really, it's so unusual, I can almost put it in the category of onus. Like, this is something that I did not see happening. And the Torah says to me, really, you shouldn't have to pay anything. But you know what? It was your ox. It gored. I know it's so unbelievably unusual. Torah says, you know what? You really shouldn't have to pay anything, but we're going to impose a fine. A punitive fine on you that you're going to have to pay for half the damages. So basically, what are the two ways we're looking at it? Either fundamentally, I should be paying everything. The Torah is cutting me a break. Or fundamentally, I should be paying zero, and the Torah is giving me a fine. Okay, so what's the difference between those two ways of looking at it? It's basically, when we arrived at half, is it compensatory? Meaning I really should be paying everything, Torah is cutting me a break, but that's compensatory, or what we call in the Gemara, tashlumim. Or I really fundamentally shouldn't have to pay anything, but the Torah is imposing a fine, and that's called kanas. Now, wait just 1 second. So now, if these are the two ways of looking at it, what's going to be the most practical difference between these two? What we discussed earlier this morning. Mode b'knas. Let's say I'm the one who goes to Basin and says, here I am, my animal gored somebody else's property. My animal gored somebody else and did damage. So now, if I step forward, so if it's compensatory, so I got to pay. If it's knas, I'm exempt. Danny, go ahead.
I was going to say it's easier to say by compensation. Two people can split the payment, but by kanas, have you split the kanas?
So, in other words, if we're arguing kanas, it means I fundamentally don't owe you. I don't owe you anything. And then the Torah just simply says, yeah, but you should have been more careful. So we're going to so the Torah is imposing a fine. Okay, so all this stated, so now we can read, we're going to see the Gemara inside, and all this is going to be laid out in the Gemara. Itmar Palganiska. This is a classic discussion in the Gemara Baba Kama, and we get to do it today. Palganiska, when we talk about Chatzi Nezek, when my animal, my short tom, again, it has to be my animal does not have a record. Okay, because we know, once my animal damages on three occasions, is what's called the mu'ad. Later in the Masechta, we're going to be discussing in great detail how we get from an animal being a tam to being a mu'ad. Right now, we're assuming the animal's a tam, and it does damages, and I have to pay for the half damages. Now, Rav Papa, Mamona, Ravuna, Breda, Yeshua, Amar, Kanasa. So here we have a basic machlokas amarayim. Is it Mamona or is it Kanas? And the Gemara is going to lay it out. I already laid it out, but now we're going to see all this inside the Gemara. Rav Papa, Mamona, Kasavar, Stam Shvarim Lav, Becheska, Shimor, Kaiman. Rav Papa's of the opinion that it's compensation. Really? He's of the opinion that generally speaking, oxen need to be watched. Meaning, even though they are generally docile animals, but still docile, but they could gore, and the owner should have been in a position of being a shomer, watching his animals. Uvidinu debay lishlame kule. And really, fundamentally, now, if damages were incurred, the owner of the ox should be paying full damages. V'rachmanu dechas aleya. Da'kate lo iyaye ture. And the Torah cuts him a break because the animal's not a muad as of yet. That's one way to look at it. Rav Huna Breda, Rav Yeshua Amar Kanasa, and Rav Huna Breda, Rav Yeshua says no. The half damage payment is really Kanas. Kasav Estam Shvarim Becheska Shimer Kaimei. Really, the way that Rav Huna views the oxen is that they are super docile animals, And really, fundamentally, he had no obligation to guard them and make sure that they didn't go out and do Karen damage. And it's the Torah imposing a kanas upon you, so that you'll be more careful with your oxen, even though they're generally docile animals, but the Torah wanted you to still be careful. The fact that you weren't means that you're going to have to pay kanas. You're going to have to pay the kanas of half damages. And again, the nafka mina now, because really, what difference does it make? So we already pointed out, just reiterating, the nafka mina would be, what if you admitted that your animal did this damage? So now if you admit it, so if it's a kanas, you're going to be exempt. If it's tashlumim, you're going to be obligated. Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah. Look at what our Mishnah said. Our Mishnah says that there's going to be an occasion where the Nizak and the Mazik are going to be sharing the, read the Mishnah carefully, tashlumin. That's clearly a reference to compensation. So if you are of the opinion that half damage is considered mamon, that's perfect. That's exactly what the Mishnah is saying. So the Gemara says, so if the half damages is a kanas, so then it's not fair to say the mazik and the nizak are both suffering the tashlumim. Because if you hold that it's kanas, this is not compensation, this is a fine. And fine imposed exclusively on the mazik, not on the nizak. So the Gemara says, okay, even if you're of the opinion that the kanas is a... Sorry. Even if you're of the opinion that chatzi nezik is a kanas, you could still read our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah says that the mazik and the nizak are going to be sharing the burden. How does that mean? What kind of shared burden are we talking about? We're talking about pchas nevela. As we know, if my animal damages your animal and I have to pay for the damages, so let's say my animal killed your animal. Now, at the point of death, your dead carcassed animal is valued at, let's say as a live animal is valued at 200. As a dead animal, it's only valued at 100. Just throwing out numbers so we can discuss. So now, it's valued at 100, so I'm going to have to pay now for damages. Because it's Karen, I only have to pay for half those damages. Now, let's just move forward a day later, 2 days later. That carcass is going to start decomposing, and it's just going to keep going down in value. So, like we discussed earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara is just reiterating right now. Who has to suffer now that devaluating carcass? The answer is the nizak. We just did it. The Gemara says, so even if you're of the opinion that the chatzi nezik payment is a kenas, still there is going to be a shared loss by mazik and nizak, and that's going to be the continued devaluation of the carcass of the animal. Pchas nevela, just give me a moment. Pchas nevela hatana le resha, tashlumi nezik melamed, sha'abal metapam benevela. So the Gemara is bothered by the fact of, if that's what our Mishnah is teaching us, the Mishnah is teaching us something that the Mishnah already taught us. We knew this already. So the Gemara says, yeah, but this idea of pchas nevela is true, whether or not the assaulting animal is either a tam or a muad, and they're both necessary. Because look, by a tam, the animal is not yet a muad. And therefore, I can then make an argument that the Torah is cutting me a break. Look, my animal has no record. I didn't expect this to happen. And now on top of, and I'm going to pay chatzi nezek. Now on top of that, you also want me to pay you the devaluating cost of your animal as it's decomposing? In other words, the Torah is cutting me a break. I can now make an argument that I shouldn't be paying pchas nevela. Ava muad emalo. But in the case of muad, where my animal now has a past record of doing damages, so then I can hear the argument better. Not only are you going to pay for full damages, you're also going to be paying me for the devaluating loss I have of the decomposing animal. So the Gemara says, so there, I can make an argument. I can also make another argument. Look, in the case of muad, I'm paying you for full damages, and I have to pay you for the devaluation of your decomposing animal. Come on, I'm paying you full damages. But in the case of tam, look, the nizak could say the mazik, you're only paying me half damages anyway. You go, oh, don't you think you should also pay me for the devaluating, decomposing animal? So the Gemara says, I could have made arguments in either direction. Tzricha. That's why I need both Mishnahs to come and teach me that the devaluating, decomposing animal is going to be suffered in either case by the Nizak. Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here. Ma bein tam lemuad. Give me the difference between an animal that is a tam versus an animal a muad. Shatam mishalem chatzi nezik migufo, umuad mishalem nezik shalem in aliyah. The basic difference is the following. If my ox gores and it doesn't have a record of doing so, I pay half damages, and the half damages get capped to the value of my animal. However, if it is a muad, if it's an animal on record that it damaged three times previously, I have to pay full damages, and I go into my wallet. Meaning, whatever the damages are, I pay, even if those damages exceed the value of my animal. Come to me after. We'll discuss this after. Just right now, let's just focus on the Gemara's on the Gemara's point, which is whether or not Chatzi Nezik is Knas or Teshlamin. The Imi is a listening Namiha. So the Gemara says, now, if you're right that the Chatzi Nezik damages is Knas, so why don't you give just another very basic difference between Tam and Muad, which is Tam in a Mishal Mal Piatzmo, Muad Mishal Mal Piatzmo. Well, if Chatzi Nezik is Knas, so you are now dealing with another very basic difference. If I step forward and say that my animal did Karen damages and it's a tam, I don't have to pay because it's kenas. And mod de kenas is pater. And if my animal is a muad, I do have to pay because it's tashlumen. Why wouldn't the price give what is a very basic difference between tam and muad? Tana v'shar, so the Gemara makes the argument of, well, there were other things that were not recorded in this brisa, and you know, the brisa is just giving us the most basic information, but there are other things that are left out. Maishai Dahai Shire, the Gemara now is required to ask, what else was left out? You can only make the argument if there was more than one thing left out. What else was left out? Shire Chatzi Kofer. The Gemara says, Chatzi Kofer. We know that if my animal is a muad and kills somebody, I have to pay for the wrongful death of that person, kofer. If my animal was a tam and killed somebody, I don't pay chatzi kofer. The brisa didn't include that. That's why we can make the argument of Tana v'shayir. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, well, that's not an exclusion, because Haman Rav Yosef Lili Damar Tamisham Chatzi Kofer. Could be that the author of the Braisa is Rabbi Yosef Aglili. He does subscribe to this viewpoint that you do pay Chatzi Kofer. Ta Shma. The Gemara says, well, let's consider now the following. We are on the very top of Tesvav Amid Beis. He Mishori Es Ploni. O Shoro Shel Ploni. My animal killed either somebody or the ox of somebody. Harizem mishalem al pi atzmo. I have to pay based on my own admission. That's the brisa. Now the Gemara's comment is very simple. My lav bitam. Now the brisa doesn't tell us whether or not my animal had a record or not. So presumably the brisa is talking about even if it's a tam, it doesn't have a record. So lo b'muad. So the Gemara says no. It's only talking about a muad. Aval tam my hachinami de'in mishalem api atzmo. So now what do you want to tell me? That if it were a tam, and because we're talking about chatzi nezik, and we're arguing that chatzi nezik is a knas, so I don't have to pay on my own admission. E hachi. So the Gemara says, well, if you're right, so then adid nisefa hemishari es avdosha ploni in mishalem api atzmo. Well, then look at the next part of that brisa, because it says, if I step forward and admit that my animal killed somebody's Evik Kanani, where there's a 30 shekel kanas that I need to pay. But that the Torah says it's a kanas. So under those circumstances, the Brisa says, well, because it's a kanas, so therefore you're going to be exempt, because mod b'kanas pater. The Gemara wants to know, liflug v'lisne b'didei. Look, you know that when the brisa is making a contrast, the brisa should be making the sharpest contrast imaginable. And why not, before going on to another case of my ox killed an Evik Kanani, why don't we just simply have a sharp and crisp contrast in the brisa itself? When do I have to pay on my own admission? Only when my animal is a muad, and that tashlumim is monetary damages. But if the animal's a tam, it doesn't have... I don't have to pay because it's chatzi nezek, and chatzi nezek is kenas. Why doesn't the braisa make that? And that's a much sharper contrast. So the Gemara says, b'mort kamayri. So the Gemara deflects, and the Gemara says, yeah, but the braisa was dealing specifically only about a muad animal. So we were looking for distinctions in a muad animal. Tashma, the Gemara says, well, okay, consider the following. The Gemara gives us a very simple rule in terms of identifying whether it's compensatory damages or punitive damages. And the rule is really simple. If the Torah imposes me to pay anything over value, that's punitive. If the Torah is expecting me to pay at value, so then that's compensatory. That's a very simple rule. Now, my love, hapachas mimashi hizik mishalem. So the Gemara says, now, based on that rule, chatzi nezek. Well, let's think about what we just learned. The rule is, if I'm paying over value, so then that's punitive. Sounds like, if it's at value or under value, it's compensatory. It's tashlumim. So the Gemara says, lo, hakamashi hizik mishalem. So the Gemara says, no. You misunderstood. Really, the rule is if I'm paying at value, it's compensatory. If I'm paying either over or under, it's punitive. So my hachinami de la mishalim miach adini zak klal klal mishalim yoser amashi hizik ena mishalim api atzmo lisnei zak klal kol she ena mishalim kemashi hizik. So the Gemara says if that's what the Braisa wanted to teach us, the Braisa could have said that and really clearly. Instead of using the word yeser, the Braisa could have used the words kema. Why did the Braisa do that? The mashma pachos mashma yoser tiyufta. So the Gemara says that is a refutation. So it sounds like right now, if you were to ask, what's the halacha? Chatzi nezek, is that a knas or is that mammon? It sounds like from the Gemara right now, the Gemara is saying that it's mammon. The only thing that's knas is when you're paying over value. But if the imposition is to pay either add value or under value, it's compensatory. So it sounds like that chatzi nezek is mammon. And then the Gemara says, and we can look at the Gemara almost incredulously, but the Gemara says, but I'm telling you, chatzi nezek is a kenas, it's not mammon. So the Gemara says, wow, that's weird. We just did almost an amud of Gemara discussing how to categorize chatzi nezek. And from the discussion of the Gemara, it sounded like chatzi nezek was a mammon payment. And then the Gemara says, but in conclusion, it's a kenas. Tiyufta vehilchasa. So the Gemara says, now after refuting the position, then you accept the position, that chatzi nezek is a kenas, in. The Gemara says, time am I, havi tiyufta mishum delo katani kamoshi izik. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you, you had a question, and we left the question unanswered, but the Gemara says, but now we're going to answer the question. Look, why didn't the Braisa say Kemashe Hizik? Meaning, anytime the Torah imposes a payment that's either overvalue or undervalue, it's a Kenas. But why didn't the Braisa say that? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you, because Lo Psikalei. Because it's not always true. Kaven de Ika Chatzi Nezik Tzoros. Because as we will be discussing later in the Masechta, there is a type of nezik where my animal stepped on a stone, and based on the pressure that was put on that stone launched like a bullet, and then hit and damaged. That's what's called chatzi nezek tzoros. Ve'uchso gemirla demamonahu. Now, even though you're only going to be paying half damages, we know halacha l'moshe mi'sinai that is, even though it's chatzi nezek, it's mammon. So that is an exception. And that's why the Braisa didn't want to say, anytime the Torah is requiring you to pay over or under, it's kenas. Even though it's most of the time true, but it's not always true. And so that's why the Braisa, if the Torah is imposing you to pay over value, it's always kenas. But the Braisa didn't want to say under because of this idea of chatzi nezek tzoros. So the Gemara says, Mishum hachilo ketani, v'hashu demar paka nizka kenasa. So now the Gemara says, so now we've learned together, chatzi nezek is a kenas. Now the Gemara says that that's true, so where does that bring us to? So first of all, as we already mentioned at the beginning of the shiur today, if it's kenas, so then mod b'kenas is pater. But now there actually is going to be another halacha coming from this. And the Gemara says, haikava da'achal imra, v'shunra da'achal tarnagola. So let's have now imagine a scenario in which my dog goes over to my neighbor's house and eats a sheep. Okay. Happens to be that my neighbors have dogs, and they are pretty big dogs, and I can just imagine on either side of my house they're going to eat a sheep. Okay. The big dogs. So, but now when a dog eats a sheep, now even though you could have made the argument, what category does that fall under? It falls under the category of shame. But remember, shame is only when the animal eats something that it's used to eating.
Yeah.
It's normal. This is so unusual. Any unusual damage falls under the category of keren. And therefore you pay chatzi nezek. But as we've just concluded in the Gemara, chatzi nezek is a kenas. Who can impose kenas penalty? Only a beis din mumchin. Only an established court that has smicha. And that can only happen if you have smicha, and that only happens in Eretz Yisrael. So now, if you have these kinds of damages taking place in Bavel, the Gemara is going to be basically dealing with, wait a second, we've just concluded that it's not compensatory. It's punitive. So how does the court order payment? So it's such a deviant way of damages, and therefore falls under the category of Karen, Velo Magbina Babavel. And so therefore, the courts in Babel cannot impose this kind of damages, because it's kenas. But the sheep in question have to be large sheep. If the sheep were very small sheep, so then it's not unusual, and therefore falls under the category of shein, and that's compensatory, and that can be adjudicated in Bavel. Now, if the damaged party goes ahead and does a tfisa, like we discussed earlier this morning, so then he gets to keep it. Just as a very interesting parenthetical note, it's not even parenthetical, Tosfos over here talks about this idea of tfisa, where basically we're allowing the damaged party to go ahead and to grab in the event that Beis Din cannot adjudicate. Tosfos says the only thing that the damaged party can grab is only that which did the damage. Meaning, in the case of the dog eating the sheep, the only thing the damaged party can grab is the dog itself. But it can't, right. But according to Tosfos, he can't grab anything else. Tosfos says, because if that would be the case, we'd be in the Wild West. Which in Bavel, actually, right, it's the Wild East. But Tosfos says he can't do that. Now, V'i Amar Kabar Li Zimna V'azin Al Ardi Yisrael. However, if let's say there was Karen damages taking place in Bavel, and the damaged party says, look, okay, fine, we can't adjudicate over here because it's Kenas, and that can only be done by Beis Din Smuchin, and that can only happen in Israel. You know what? Let's set a court date to go to Israel. So Kavi'inalei. So then, he obviously is allowed to make an appointment. And I know there's a lot of expenses over here in terms of travel, and I don't know who has to pay those expenses, but they could set an appointment to go to Israel. Now, if the damager says, you know what, I refuse, I'm not going to Israel, so he's in contempt, and therefore they could put him in cherem. And furthermore, as long as that person's got that crazy dog in his house, Beis Din can also put that person with the dog in his house in Cherem. A person should not raise a wild dog in his house. A person should not have an unstable ladder in his house. He's in violation of the Isser in the Torah of Losa Tassim Damim Vesecha. He has hazards in his house. The crazy dog, the wobbly ladder, and so therefore if that person has that situation, Beis Din is allowed to put him in cherem to help incentivize and motivate him to get rid of it.